This morning, Collins v. America's Servicing Company. Mr. Stoschel.
May it please the Court. Morning, Your Honor. Robert Stoschel for Philip Collins. Your Honors, this is, as we're seeing now throughout the courts, another instance of a homeowner trying to save his home through conduct that probably isn't appropriate by a mortgage lender or, in this case, its servicer. In the fall of 06, as you saw from the record, Mr. Collins fell behind 1 month in his payment. And so he called his servicing company, ASC, and said, "What can I do about this?" And ASC said, We've got it covered. We have the SMART plan." And basically, the SMART plan was a forbearance agreement. And what that forbearance agreement provided was that Mr. Collins, the date of his payment would move from the first of the month to the 15th of the month, and the payment would increase so that he would be making current the one payment that he missed.
Let me just ask you, what's Mr. Collins' occupation?
Mr. Collins worked in Illinois. He was, I guess, he puts in water systems.
Just curious about
yes.
his background and knowledge, maybe dealing with the legal documents.
No, Your Honor. There was no evidence in the record per se on that. But he's not a lawyer. Has no college degree. He just puts in water systems. Your Honor, when they entered into the forbearance agreement, it provided that as long as he made the payments on time, everything would be okay. And as you saw in the record, Mr. Collins and his wife also testified, though she's not on the mortgage documents herself, each of those payments were made on time. The problem arose in this case, though, in the August of 07. Because this was a variable rate mortgage, and the rate went up. Collins went to refinance his mortgage, trying to save the home because they couldn't make the increased payment. What happened then when they did the credit search? They found that even though that they had made every payment pursuant to the contract agreements between Collins and ASC, and even though they made the payments on time in the amounts requested, ASC had shown that they were delinquent in every one of those monthly payments to the credit bureaus.
They were applying to the last payment, to one missed payment.
We believe that that's what they were doing. The problem in this entire situation, Your Honor, is that this ASC doesn't consider the forbearance agreement to be a contract. When you look at the testimony of the witnesses, they always look at the original documents. They always look at the original documents and ignore basically the language of the new contract, the forbearance agreement. For instance, the forbearance agreement talks about we're going to do credit reporting. Okay. They always do credit reporting, whether the payment's made on time or made late. They don't say in there that they're going to make the credit reporting late. And that's the problem. Now these folks go to refinance their mortgage, and they can't do it because they've got 9 months of late payments. The same thing with the late fees. Under the contract, the agreement, Collins were entitled, ASC was entitled to obtain a late fee of about $75 a month. But what happened in this case was, even though, again, they made those payments on time in the amount required by the forbearance agreement, the SMART plan, they were charged $75 a month in late fees. And, of course, in this case, as the record would reflect, the late fees that's a fee or an assessment that ASC as the loan servicer gets to keep. They don't go back to the lender itself. So as a result of this, Your Honors, the Collins, as the record would reflect, are now in a foreclosure because they can't and could not afford the increase in payments. As a result of, and all of this goes back to the fact that ASC, in this case, Your Honors, does not consider or construe that forbearance agreement to be a contract. Under Indiana law, mortgage documents are contracts. Under Indiana law, contracts can be modified by the parties. And most importantly, under Indiana law, if there's an ambiguity or in a contract, it's going to be construed against the party who made the contract. In this case, it's ASC. At the very minimum, Your Honors, there's an ambiguity here as to whether or not late fees are going to be charged, because the forbearance agreement doesn't say that they will be. At the very minimum, there's an ambiguity in the contract as with respect to the type of credit reporting that would be made. Because here it says, yes, we're going to report, but that doesn't say we're going to report bad credit. In fact, Dita Collins, the wife of Mr. Collins, testified that that's the reason they went into this program, to avoid bad credit reporting, so that they would make their payments on time. That was the reason why they started this. And unfortunately for the Collins, Your Honor, ASC had a different viewpoint as to the enforceability of that and the enforceability of the forbearance agreement. We believe that, Your Honors, that the district court was in error when it found that ASC was within the contractual rights to assess not only a late fee, but also to make the improper credit reporting. The district court, we believe, did not give proper consideration to the modified contract of the parties, which is evidenced by the forbearance agreement. We'd ask, therefore, Your Honors, that you reverse the district court's decision in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, David Pruitt on behalf of ASC in this case. Mr. Collins had a mortgage contract with WMC Mortgage Corporation. Those servicing obligations were transferred to ASC in this case. Under the original...
ASC is owned by Wells Fargo?
They are. They are, Your Honor.
How do you know that? Oh, you read it.
Under the contract at issue in this case, Your Honors, a due date was established for the first of the month for the monthly payments that were owed by the Collins under that contract. It became clear during the record reflected below, in the case below, that he fell behind in making those payments. And he fell behind beginning in January of 2006.
Fell behind in making them later than the first, right?
That's right. There is a 15-day grace period under the contract, but he was not able to make the contract payment due in January, subsequently made that payment, but then he missed payments in September and October of 2006. So at the time of this repayment plan that counsel referred to earlier, he is 2 months behind in making his payments.
So you made them apply applicable to the prior month's payments.
Right.
Under the generating a late fee every time you made a payment.
Well, under the terms of the agreement, Your Honor, the way that the payments are handled are in the order they became due.
Right. And so, I understand that. But,
sure.
There's no written agreement, though, for that, right?
Pardon me?
There was no written agreement?
There is a provision in the contract, Your Honor, that says the payments received will be...
Under the initial loan agreement?
You're talking about the forbearance agreements that were entered into earlier? No, Your Honor, there's nothing specific to that point. But, importantly, that forbearance agreement says that all the terms of the note, except as provided in the forbearance agreement, remain in full force and effect. And there's nothing in the forbearance agreements that change the ability or the right of ASC to charge late fees for missing payments. And to clarify, and just to make this point clear to Your Honors, at the time that this first forbearance agreement is entered into, ASC would have a right to foreclose on the property. So the forbearance agreements that were entered into allowed him to keep his home if he made those payments under that forbearance agreement. It doesn't mean that he can unilaterally change the terms of the loan in terms of the the time frame, but it allowed him to keep his home if he made those payments. And so that was the purpose of the forbearance agreement that was entered into between the parties. He subsequently was not able to meet the payment dates set forth in those forbearance agreements and then entered into a second forbearance agreement. And even under that agreement, he was not able to pay his payments on time as provided for in that agreement. So that, by way of background, is why the breach of contract claim fails here. You do have to, as counsel for appellant states, read all of these documents together. And when you read those documents together, nothing in the forbearance agreements changes the right of ASC to charge late fees if the payments are not received under the due date or by the due date set forth in the contract.
Now, it doesn't seem that this outfit did anything that wasn't authorized. However, it's prescription for exactly what happened to foreclosure. I mean, this guy is, we've gone through several years now of exactly this kind of things, of banks doing this sort of thing, because they give it to, what, ASC? Where's ASC located?
They are headquartered in Iowa, Your Honor. Well, for example, Your Honor, if when Mr. Collins missed his January payment in 2006, he was charged a late fee because he did not meet his payment date at that time. On January 20th, he paid the $75 late fee at that time, so there was no subsequent late fees until he began missing payments in September and October of 2006. And under the terms of the agreement, ASC was allowed to charge late fees, and counsel for the appellant cannot point to any language in the forbearance agreements that changes the terms of the contracted issue in this case. And furthermore, appellant has not been able to challenge or contradict the way that the payments were received in terms of the due dates and the dates on which they were received. So for those reasons, we believe that the breach of contract claim fails and the trial court was properly guided in denying that in granting our motion for summary judgment.
There's nothing in that forbearance agreement, though, that says we're going to charge $75 every month as a late fee.
Your Honor, there's nothing in the forbearance agreement that addresses late fees.
That this mortgage holder who's got in tough times would think that when he gets into this refinancing agreement that he's not being charged $75 every month.
He continues to receive statements, Your Honor, indicating that these late fees are accruing, and you also have the evidence in the case that he did pay, in fact, a $75 late fee.
The first time. Yeah,
correct.
But not after he entered into this agreement, and they keep building up every month, and pretty soon he never gets in such a hole he could never get himself out, right?
In theory, that could happen, Your Honor, but...
Well, in practice, it happened here, didn't it?
Well, he did not pay the late fees that were required under the contract. You're right, Your Honor. And there is a separate foreclosure proceeding that is currently pending in state court in Indiana. ASC has been sued by the plaintiff in this case for the late fees that were charged. So the foreclosure proceeding is still ongoing in state court.
Of course, the other thing is that the credit reports, which are driving his credit score down to...
And credit reporting is provided for in the forbearance agreement, Your Honor.
Yeah. As Judge Kaney said, it doesn't mean that it's not in the plan. You can do it, but does it seem right that he gets into this forbearance agreement, now he's making these payments, and it looks like he's delinquent every month, and you're reporting to a credit agency. So how can he go out and refinance the loan?
He's able to keep your house, Your Honor. At the time that he's 2 months behind in making his payments, he's able to keep his house by going into this forbearance agreement. So that's a pretty significant hook or pretty significant chip for a homeowner to have.
Well, there used to be a thing in the law called sharp practice.
I understand, Your Honor. I understand.
Confined to banks, not lawyers.
If I could move on to the second claim that the that Mr. Collins has brought in the case, he brought a IHLPA claim, which governs conduct in credit agreements. And for the reasons that we demonstrated below, there are several reasons why that claim fails. First of all, we provided authority that under the Indiana Lender Liability Act, there are no oral modifications allowed for loan agreements. He has not been able to challenge that either legally or factually, either below or before this court, with any authority to the contrary. Second, he also has admitted during discovery that he has no evidence of any oral or written misrepresentations that were fraudulent. So that is another reason why his IHLPA claim would fail. Third, under the Act, he has to point to knowing or intentional conduct. Under the Act, knowing is defined as actual knowledge, and he has not designated any evidence that ASC had actual knowledge that any of the representations, which he's admitted were not fraudulent, were done knowingly or intentionally. And finally, we've provided the court with case law saying that exercise of contractual rights is not a deceptive act under analogous consumer fraud statutes in other states. So for those reasons, we believe that the summary judgment order entered in this case on that claim was correct, and we'd ask that the court affirm that order in its entirety.
Thank you.
Just briefly, Your Honors. First, counsel mentioned that Mr. Collins, maybe I misunderstood him, that he tried to unilaterally change the terms of this agreement. There was no unilateral conduct with Mr. Collins at all. He called the company, and they entered into a new contract, the forbearance agreement, the SMART plan, which was delivered to Mr. Collins, and which he agreed to comply with.
Didn't the new contract provide that the old agreement was still in effect?
Yes, except to the extent that it was modified or changed by the forbearance agreement. Yes. Now, as far as the finally, as far as the violation of the Indiana Home Loan Practices Act, it's not necessary to prove, as far as we believe, fraudulent conduct. You have to show that there was a deceptive act on behalf of the party engaged in the mortgage transaction. And a deceptive act is when a party makes a material misrepresentation or conceals material information regarding the terms and conditions of the transaction. And that's what we have here. As counsel has pointed out, there's nothing specific in the forbearance agreement that we're going to make bad credit reporting, which was critical to the Collins. That's why they entered into the SMART plan in the first place. Second law, there's no circumstance here where it identifies that a late fee will be paid. Now, when you look at the contract itself, it talks about when late charges can be made, and it says it can be made if I don't make my payment when due. Okay, well, the forbearance agreement says these are the dates you are to make your payment in this amount. He made those payments on the dates that were provided for and the amounts provided for. So why should he be assessed a late fee? It doesn't provide for in the forbearance agreement. So not only is it the late fees, Your Honor, but also, again, it's the credit reporting. And when counsel says it's almost ironic, we let him keep his house, well, they're not going to be able to keep their house. And they're not going to be able to keep their house because the information in the forbearance agreement was not spelled out. Thank you, John.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to the...